Right, so we're just setting up. This is the first time we've done the hybrid events at this place. I'm just going to so folks online, as always, ask if you can turn your cameras on. That's nice. Then we can see who you are. I'm going to turn you around right now, and I'm going to introduce you to everyone here. Okay, hi everyone. Hey, what's going on? So normally we have like a hybrid event, which is not really hybrid, but it's more like a kind of split personality event.
That's
with two completely different groups. I don't know. But anyway, we try to do what we can. So thanks so much, Nilushi, for that introduction. Welcome everybody back from our break over the summer. And most of you know already, but just to remind you that for this year, our schedules changed a little bit. We're here in Crow's Nest on the Friday nights. So some of you may be joining from overseas or outside of Sydney, and hopefully for you, it won't change too much. We just need to a bit of tweaking of the technical setup. And we'll be in Parramatta on Tuesday nights at 6 for a 6:30 start. Okay, so if you're hanging around Parramatta, and that event is just in person. And so no technology there. So set 6 for a 6:30 start in the 5 Parramatta Square. Okay, so if you're interested to come along to Parramatta, just come on to 5 Parramatta Square sometime at 6, between 6 and 6:30, and just ask at the desk and I'll send you to wherever we are. All right, and by the way, there's good parking in the Parramatta one and public transport as well and disabled access, so it's good. All right, so for this first 4 weeks, we're going to be doing a Introduction to Buddhist Meditation course. So essentially, each time I give this session, I've been doing similar sessions for a long time now, 20 years, close to 20 years. And each time we do these sessions, we always begin with doing some meditation. That's a core part of what we're doing. And then usually I give a Dhamma talk on various things. But for this 4 weeks, we're going to be focusing specifically on teaching meditation. And that is meant as an onboarding for people who are not familiar with meditation or not familiar with the Buddhist approach to meditation, and hopefully a re-grounding and a re-establishing for those of us who've been practicing for a while. Always helps to get back over the basics. All right, so we are going to begin, as always, with some chanting. And so we have some Pali chanting sheets around. I'm not sure if we have enough. We can pass anyone who does not have chanting sheets. We have some more here. I think a lady at the front here who needs one. And here, you want some here as well. Yes, yes. All right, no problems. Take your time. Take your time. And just as a background for those of you who may not be familiar, we'll be chanting in the Pali language, which is the language that the Buddha himself spoke or near enough. And these are chants that are recited routinely throughout, especially the Theravada Buddhist tradition. So if you're traveling around Asia, you go to Sri Lanka or Indonesia or Thailand, then you'll hear people chanting very similar chants. So the fact that we can join in and do these chants is a way of bringing us together and also a way of just coming closer to the Buddha and to the Buddha's words. So these are the traditional verses of our homage and reverence for the Buddha. Okay, so I'm not sure, should we wait for them to come back? Or what do you think? Well, that's the thing, right?
Is it just that? Is there a toilet on this level?
Yeah, there's a toilet on this level. Yeah, a couple of people just went out to the loo, so we're just going to wait for them to come back. Sorry?
Community.
But it isn't one of the greatest virtues, patience.
Thank you. Kanti paramantapo ditikam. Kanti is the highest austerity. Nibbanam paramam varanti buddha. Nibbana is the highest, say the Buddhas. Say the Buddhas. Anyway. Fine. So anyone heard any good jokes recently? How many Buddhists does it take to get a microphone working? You know, I wrote a whole series of Buddhist light bulb jokes. Yes. How many Nagarjunas does it take to change a light bulb? When there is no light bulb and no Nagarjuna, how can there be any change?
I have one.
You have one. We have a volunteer.
I have one. Aussie joke. I got invented this joke. It comes from a play on words.
Okay.
So, are you guys familiar with that thing? This forward to like add, keep calm and carry on.
Yes.
Well, I saw one on the first take of it. It's keep karma and carry on.
Keep karma and carry on. Thank you. Thank you. Excellent. Excellent. So not many people know this, but Buddhists, in fact, invented the knock-knock joke. Did you know that? It's not a quote. In the Vimalakirti Nidesa, the Bodhisattva Vimalakirti is sick. He gives out the message that he's sick. Sariputta comes to see him at the door, at his house, visits, knocks on the door, knock-knock, who's there? Nobody's home, says Vimalakirti. Sariputta says, what do you mean there's nobody home? I can hear your voice. So it's one of the under-acknowledged cultural contributions of Buddhism, along with abseiling, hang gliding, and too many others to mention. Yeah, we invented hang gliding as well. Yeah, it's in the Chadanta Jataka. Yeah. Anyway, moving along. I did actually promise just like 10 minutes ago that we're going to be focusing on meditation for this course. So let's do that. Namo adasa bhagavato arahato sambuddhasa. Namo adasa bhagavato arahato sambuddhasa. Sa-ta-de-va-ma-sa-buddha. So I'll say a few words and then we'll do some guided meditation together. So over these 4 weeks, we'll focus on mindfulness of breathing meditation. It's the most commonly practiced, most universally useful approach to meditation in Buddhism. And each week we will go a little bit deeper into that practice, and I we can't cover everything to do with meditation in just 4 short weeks, but we can do enough to ground ourselves and to be confident about what we're doing. A lot of the time people are not really sure what they're doing, or they feel uncertain about their practice, but in my experience, most of the time most people are doing just fine in their meditation. And if you have a regular practice, then most of the time, then just keep going. And a lot of the time when people come to me with different problems or different questions about the practice, usually my job is to say, well, that's interesting, keep going. Mm-hmm. Yeah? But still, it's good to check in, because sometimes it isn't. Sometimes maybe you are going down the wrong path or something like that. But rarely, rarely. So meditation, in fact, is very simple. And breathe in and breathe out. The nice thing about meditation is that your breath already wants to calm you down. This is the number one key to meditation. It's not about what you do. It's not about you making yourself calm. Your breath, in fact, is already calming you down. Right now, as you're sitting here, your breath is making you calm. You don't believe me? Try not breathing. See how calm you are. Doesn't take long. You think about it. All the time we've been alive, our breath has been soothing us and calming us every minute of every day that we've been alive, even when we're asleep. If we're asleep, if we lose control of our breath, we panic. So your breath has always been there. It's always been calming you down. So don't worry about it. Don't worry about if the breath, like when you're meditating, sometimes we hold on to the breath too much, sometimes we focus too much, and we get afraid that where is the breath gone? Or am I paying attention to it the right way? Or these things. We have these anxieties that come up around the breath. But in a way, that's kind of also the point of the meditation, because the meditation reveals these anxieties, because every single one of those anxieties at its root is the question, am I going to die? To which the answer, of course, is yes. Vincent, welcome. Please don't be sorry. Be glad that you came. And the breath is there reminding us, yes, you're going to die, but not just yet. You know, the monks used to go in Thailand, monks used to go to Ajahn Chah's monastery in northeast Thailand, and he learned a few words of English because they had so many Western monks coming there. And so one of the questions he used to ask was, have you come here to die? Just to freak out the new applications. And they'd come here and they'd say, oh, I want to come and stay and learn some meditation. He'd look at them and say, have you come here to die? Which worked fine until they had an Australian guy. He said, have you come here to die? He said, no, I came yesterday, mate. Anyway, so your breath is already doing the work. It's not you doing the work, your breath is doing the work. And if you can shift your perception like that, meditation becomes easy. It's not about you, it's not about you getting anything, not about you achieving anything. It's about you letting go and letting the breath take care of you. Now, what we want to do is we want to establish a context which is going to make it easy for the breath to do that job. So I'm now going to talk about some of the preliminaries that we use to set up our meditation. Okay, so number one, let's have a purpose, all right? We have a purpose to our meditation. We have a purpose to our practice. Now, each of you has within you two purposes, okay? One purpose is the purpose that tell yourself that you're here for. Maybe you tell yourself you're here to get enlightened or something like that. And then the other one is the purpose that you're really here for. Which may, depending on your own level of self-awareness, they might be the same purpose, right? But often they're not. Often we might have an idea of what we're here for, but then actually when we're meditating, we learn to understand ourselves. Yeah? When our wisdom is deep and our mindfulness is strong, there'll be those two purposes will become just one. But don't worry too much about that. Whatever purpose has driven you here, the main thing is you are here. And that purpose, the driving motivation behind that purpose is what in Buddhism we call nekkhama. It means renunciation, letting go. Nekkhama isn't just something that for monastics, not just something for ascetics, not just something for what you do on retreat or something like that. Nekkhama or renunciation is what you have done when you've said, of all of the fun things you could be doing tonight, you're here instead. I don't know what fun things you could have been doing tonight, whatever, but you're here. And we've all given up something to be here. And we've all done that because somehow we have an aspiration to uplift ourselves. We have it somehow, an idea inside ourselves that we can be better, that we can grow, that we can elevate our own mind and our own consciousness. Now, in Buddhism, that process and that elevation comes solely from within. We are not relying on God. We're not relying on an app. We are certainly not relying on AI to elevate us. We are relying on our own intrinsic wisdom. That's it. And within that, this is the thing. This is the thing in Buddhism, that the Buddha believed that within each person was an astonishing potential for self-transformation. As we call this potential, we call it indriya. Yeah? It's an energy. It's a transformative potential. Each person has this within them. And we can all learn to grow and manifest that so we can change radically, not just a little bit, but we can change radically. Now, here's the thing. Change is change. We're all changing all the time. Right? And we can change by dropping a pill and change our brain chemistry, have some different experiences. Right? But it's not a spiritual path because that's just chemistry. In a spiritual path, we want to change at a much more fundamental level, and it addresses every aspect of who we are. So the Buddha talked about this in terms of the Eightfold Noble Path, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. As those of you who have been here for a while will know, I usually test you on whether you've known that. Because it's the first class, I'm not testing you today, but I will next time, all right? So right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right samadhi, or right immersion. Okay, so fine, we have these eight factors. Now notice that the first five of those factors are not actually about meditation. So right view is about the beliefs that we have, the way that we see the world, the way that we understand the world. Right intention, I've already talked a little bit about this, so this is our renunciation or our intention for compassion, our intention for loving kindness. Then right speech, yeah, talking at the right time, not talking at the right time. Right action, not to kill, steal, or commit sexual misconduct, and various other moral precepts, but that's the summary. And then the right livelihood is your job or lack thereof, right? How you make a living and how what your lifestyle is your right livelihood. This one is a very important one because often you find in Buddhism, people will be like, I find it's hard to do my practice because my job was too busy, right? That's a misunderstanding. That's wrong view, in fact. That's wrong view. Because your job is part of your practice. It's part of the Noble Eightfold Path. That's your right livelihood of the Noble Eightfold Path. So if you're thinking of your job as being something separate than your practice, or even worse, something that's antagonistic to your practice, then that's wrong view. You have to realize that your work is part of your spiritual practice. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time talking about these five factors, because we're going to be focusing on the meditation part, but it is really crucial to know that in Buddhist meditation, it is that your meditation practice is grounded on all of these things, which address every aspect of your life, your thoughts, your beliefs, your values, your actions, your speech, and all of those things. And if you try to just fix one, if you try to do some meditation to make your mind to de-stress, or something like that, it's not really going to work very well. And in fact, it can be counterproductive, or if you do it in an extreme way, it can even be harmful. So don't try to like skip these things. Don't try to hack it. Don't try to look for a shortcut. There is, if you want to, you want to know the shortcut is in fact the Noble Eightfold Path. Like the Buddha didn't teach you the Noble Eightfold Path because he wanted you hanging around in samsara. He wanted you to get out of samsara as quickly as possible. That's why he taught the Noble Eightfold Path, so that we could be free of suffering, so we could find liberation. That's already the shortcut. The long way is to do what the Buddha did, which was to wander through countless rebirths, stumbling around, learning lessons here and there, forgetting them, and then eventually finding his way to the path. That's the long way. So thankfully, we have a shortcut. All right, so that's the first thing is the purpose, right? And also covered a bit about the precepts, right? There's giving the moral context within which meditation happens. Okay, just to sort of just to notice that the word or one of the words in Pali for meditation is citta bhavana. Right? So Pali is, we just did our chanting in Pali, and Pali is like the scriptural language of Theravada Buddhism. So citta bhavana is one of the words for meditation, and it literally means growing the mind, right? Expanding your mind, enhancing your mind. This is important to know. Why? Because you can grow your mind in different ways, and not all of them are good, right? You can learn meditation skills that will actually be counterproductive or psychologically unhealthy, right? But just to give you one example of how you might do that, you can do that in a way to create a dissociation, so that you can go into meditation and find your meditation state and find some peace in the meditation state, but then that's separate from what you're doing out afterwards. And so you can fail to integrate that and actually create a dissociative state with your meditation. Right? So development of the mind in and of itself can be either wholesome or unwholesome. So that's why in Buddhism we need to ground that on our precepts and on our moral conduct. All right, so it's the precepts and it's the purpose. That's great. Next, let's just say a couple of words about posture. Okay, so here we are all sitting on chairs. Is sitting on chairs good for meditation? Good? Yeah? Yes and no? It's all right? Look, encourage people, if people want to sit on the floor, go for it, right? And we sort of get into this habit of not having meditation cushions and stuff, but we probably should do, right? I don't know. What do you think, right? You like it? Feel grounded, right? If you can sit comfortably on the floor, it's always nicer, you know? And but if you're not comfortable, because like most of us grew up sitting on chairs. So one of the things that I learned when I went to Thailand, we'd go to the monasteries and you're always at meditation and chanting, eating the meal. Everything you're doing is on the floor. They don't have any chairs, basically, in the forest monasteries, very few. And ow, hurt a lot. I ended up going to hospital twice. Most of the senior monks have all had operations on their knees. And it's bad. And I realized why is because Thai people like just sit on the floor all the time. It's their kids, you know. They sit, if they're watching telly, they're sitting on the floor. They're playing with their mates, they're sitting on the floor. They're having dinner, they're sitting on the floor. And, you're obviously just used to it in that kind of way. So if you're comfortable sitting on the floor, great. If you'd like to learn to sit on the floor, do some yoga, develop your posture. And I'd encourage you, if you want to, you know, do some yoga, develop your posture, and ask your yoga teacher for some help. Get them to give you some tips on your posture and to know what kind of stretches and so on that's going to be helpful and improve your posture. Otherwise, we sit on chairs. Great. So if you're sitting on chairs, these chairs we have here at the Crow's Nest Center are pretty good, and I'm just going to detail what makes a good meditation chair. Number one, there's a bit of a cushion on it, not too hard, but also not too soft. Couches, no, not good meditation chairs. Anything that's not really stable, like a folding chair or one on coasters, and so on, these are not usually very good because it doesn't feel very stable. Generally, one that's got like four legs, or these ones are pretty solid, it's good. A bit of a back that doesn't sort of slip back or lean back too much is good. And no arms is generally better. You usually find that if you're sitting, especially if you're sitting for a long time, the arms get in the way when you're sitting meditation. It's kind of weird, but it actually starts to hurt after a while. You're sitting there for like half an hour and then it's like, ow. So if how your legs are depends on how long your legs are, either sitting straight on the floor, crossed like this, or if you find your legs are dangling off the edge, maybe get something cushion or something like that to put them on to stop the dangle. I'm not sure if we have anything here, but anyway. So some posture that is comfortable enough that you're not going to feel tense and relaxed enough that you can sustain it for the period of the meditation without fidgeting and so on. Right? So generally, as a rule of thumb with the posture, set your posture and make sure that it's okay at the start of the meditation. And then once you've started meditating, then don't worry about your posture too much. If you find that you're like slumping or leaning or something like that, don't worry about it. It doesn't really matter, okay? Nobody cares, okay? Nobody's looking at you thinking, ew, what are they doing leaning in the meditation? If they are, then they shouldn't be because they're supposed to be meditating themselves, right? So that's their problem. So it happens, but if you do feel like you want to correct your posture, then just like mindfully say, okay, now I'm going to correct my posture, and then just mindfully do it so you don't relinquish your mindfulness. Okay, so posture, the period of time. So we're going to meditate for about 20 minutes today. Now, generally speaking, I recommend that as a starter meditation practice, 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, okay? So this is my recommendation. Why 20 minutes a day? Because 20 minutes is long enough to go into the meditation and to feel the peacefulness of the meditation. If you're doing maybe 5 to 10 minutes, maybe you'll feel a bit peaceful or something, but maybe not. 20 minutes most of the time, you'll feel actually quite different than you did at the beginning. Why not more than 20 minutes? Because after that, often you'll start to fall asleep. Maybe after 30, 40 minutes, then your energy starts to go down and your mind starts to drift and then you start to fall asleep. Now, obviously that's a generalization. If your energy is good, you want to keep meditating? Fantastic, you know, keep meditating. But don't be like pushing yourself to meditate, oh, I've got to meditate longer because I think I should meditate longer. Meditate longer because your mind is bright and full of energy and your mind wants to meditate longer. Right? So let the energy of your mind lead you. If you feel like you've meditated for 20 minutes and you feel okay, but you'd like to do some more practice, then get up and do some walking meditation. Mindfully stand up and mindfully walk back and forth. Even, you know, maybe it's like the weekend, maybe you have a bit of time off, you know, even just walk back and forth even for a few minutes, 5-10 minutes, and then come back and sit again. It's better to keep your mindfulness sharp and alert in your meditation rather than just by being sort of lazily sitting there and just letting the mind drift off and become hazy. So this is a period of time for meditation, a place for meditation. So here we have our place together at the Crow's Nest Center, and we have a place to join together to meditate, and we can share in the energy that we create to meditate and to do our practice. For those of you who are at home, and of course everybody here will be going home afterwards, it can be difficult to find a place at home to do your meditation. If you can, I would encourage you to create a meditation space, like put up a shrine somewhere, set aside a little space if you can. Obviously, if you don't have the space, you can't do that, but put aside a little space and have that be a space that you can enter into to do your meditation. Otherwise, sometimes you can go to a park, go to somewhere that's peaceful or quiet to meditate. But even if you can't have a permanent space at home to meditate, at least when you do meditate, then make your space nice before you meditate. Don't just sit in the middle of all the mess and crap that's lying around your apartment or whatever normally. I'm not speaking of anyone in particular here. But it is kind of interesting how in the Visuddhimagga, which is the main meditation manual in Buddhism, in Theravada Buddhism, it actually talks... Is that yours? No, which was that? Sorry, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have. I thought it must be the young person who's got their phone going on. She hasn't got one, good, yeah. Okay, anyway, so thank you, whoever's phone that was, thank you so much for reminding us about impermanence and suffering. That's fantastic, but we've got the lesson now. We don't need to be reminded again. So if you could switch your phones off, that would be great. Thank you. So where were we? The period of time, the place of meditation. Yes, so if you can, so Visuddhimagga devotes quite a bit of space, in fact, towards this question, like where do you meditate? I mean, not just the Visuddhimagga, in the suttas, when the Buddha was giving meditation instructions, the first thing that he would say, Idha bhikkhave bhikkhu rukkhamoola gato, go on to the root of a tree, aranya gato, go on to the forest, yeah? Go on to a cave, go on to a sitting on a heap of straw, sitting in an open space, sitting in an empty room. So there are many different places to be able to meditate. And it's important to remember this because, why? Because sometimes people think, oh, I can meditate when I'm on the train going to work in the morning, all right? Now look, you want to do a bit of mindfulness on the train when you go to work in the morning? Good on you. I try to do that too when I'm on the train coming here. I read my book for a while and then maybe sit for a while or something like that. That's nice. But it's not the same, right? To meditate, you have to actually create a space to meditate in. And the act of creating the space is part of your intention. It's part of what makes the meditation concrete. So if you do something special, there's a reason why the sages in ancient India would go to the Himalayas and sit in caves for so many years. It has an effect on the mind. So, you know, just try to make a space in your home, if you can, or wherever you go, that you can create that intentional space that's going to support your meditation. All right. So I think that's the main things I wanted to cover. Let's do some guided meditation for the next 20 minutes or so. Sitting quietly, bringing attention to your body and relaxing into your seat. Now bring attention to the gentle feeling of the breath as it comes in and the breath as it goes out. Mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out. Mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out. Mindfully breathing in. Mindfully breathing out. Mindfully breathing in. Mindfully breathing out. Mindfully breathing in. Mindfully breathing out. Notice as you continue, suffuses through your body, calming, easing. And there's nothing in the world as soft and as pleasant, that gentle feeling of the breath.
And now coming near to the end of the meditation. Before we finish, I want you to cast your mind back . Ask yourself, what was it like at the beginning of the meditation? What did your breath feel like? What did your body feel like? What kinds of tensions or energies or stresses were there? And then how did it change during the meditation itself? What was the breath like? What did you actually how did you actually experience the breath? And what is it like now? What does your breath feel like now? Remember that whatever the difference is between how it is now and how it was at the start, that's the result of your meditation. And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize Nibbana. Okay, very good. Right, great. So let's have a short break, grab a cup of tea, stretch your legs, come back for some coffee. Have another question? What are you making? What are you crocheting? A lot?
A lion.
A lion?
A lion. Like a water or a lion straight?
Oh, yes, crocheting a lion. I thought you were doing a lion. That would be good, though. But if you did. Everyone would think it was a panther because it's pink. Anyway. Okay, anyway, so hi all to my friends online. Venerables at Dhammasara, how's it going? Winnie the Pooh, how's it going? Dennis? Winnie the Pooh's here. Delaney's here. Gillian. Justin. Christelle in Sweden. How's it going in Sweden, Christelle? Cold? Funnily enough, that's not a problem we're dealing with right here. Okay, Dhiryupa. Megan, oh, great to see that you managed to join. I think that obviously Megan's joining from rural Western Australia. And she's a good Dhamma friend of ours, but no, obviously they've just managed to put in like Wi-Fi out there, so that's really a big step forward for.
Finally, it's come.
Big step forward for WA. That's great. And connect to the internet now. You know what they say when you travel to Perth? The time zone is very tricky because if you leave, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning, and you arrive, it's like 1987.
It's time
to I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
It's very true.
I'm from WA. I can say that. I'm sorry. All right. So, because we're running a little bit late for the talk this evening, and it's been a little bit chaotic for our first night, but that's okay. It's good chaos. And we do have to like finish up here because we can't run late because the staff has to go home and so on. So I'll give a brief talk about covering some of the reinforcing some of the same ground that we discussed in the meditation. So when we're talking about mindfulness of breathing, right, we are talking about a particular way of practicing mindfulness of the body. Okay, so the breath is physical. It's part of your body. When you're paying attention to it, you're paying attention to a dimension of your body. All right, fine. Of the many different kinds of meditation that we can practice in Buddhism, all of them should begin in some way with mindfulness of the body. No meditation should be completely divorced or separated from the body, except in some very specific circumstances. If people are dealing with certain difficulties that they have to overcome in meditation. But as a general rule, it's good. Any meditation should be well grounded in mindfulness of the body. Now, mindfulness of the body is something that in our modern culture we are excellent at destroying. And I mean, just walked here to come to the thing, and you realize like how much extra mindfulness you have to just make your way around all the people walking along on their phones. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's actually like there's an externalization of the cognitive effort that it takes to not bump into people, because everyone around, so many people just walking on phones, and you have to walk around them, and then they're like, hey, I'm really cool, I can be on my phone and not bump into people. So we are excellent at dissociating ourselves from our body. Many of us spend much of the day at a desk where our body is cut in half, and the bit that matters is up here and the bit down there doesn't, whatever. And think about how that is compared to, say, the Buddha in a meditation posture, where you have that fully integrated and grounded and balanced bodily posture. So the more that we become separated from our bodies and from the being grounded in the mindfulness of the body, then the harder it is for us to establish meditation. So anything that you can do to establish that is good. And that means like exercise, means doing some yoga, means doing some Tai Chi, anything like that can be good. Walking meditation is traditionally, and in the forest tradition that I come from, the walking meditation is usually the practice that accompanies the sitting meditation. And so we will walk back and forth at a medium pace, not too fast, not too slow, and be mindful of every footfall. Yeah, feeling the sensations under your feet and noticing what it's like to actually take those steps. So mindfulness is something that we can cultivate. And it's not something which is just there or isn't there. It's something that we can grow. And even though I think that for most of us, I think that there is a shatteredness to our mindfulness, like our sense of who we are, like the energy that contains who we are is moving out in all kinds of different directions all the time, is being impacted by different things and it's going out in different ways, and it's creating this very kind of dynamic, kind of energetic body that we experience here. And I don't think it's particularly healthy, and it's certainly not particularly spiritually useful. So through meditation, we want to remedy that by finding a groundedness in the body. And initially, we can do that by focusing in the body. We can do it by paying attention to the posture, and we can do it through paying attention to your breath. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the breath as a physical experience. The
The breath is interesting because it sits at the like a borderline between what is autonomous and what is intentional. All right. So some bodily functions, like your heart, it's purely autonomous. You don't control that intentionally. Others, like you're moving your arms around, purely intentional and not autonomous. But your breath, kind of in between. Normally, you just breathe automatically. Don't pay attention to it, and your breath is fine. But if you want to, you can stop breathing and start and control like that. So this is an unusual feature of the breath. One of the reasons why the breath is such an excellent meditation practice is because it reveals the way that our anxieties grab hold of that process of breathing. And when you're sitting and breathing, it's very common, especially in the early stages of meditation, that your breath will become hard, your breath will become tight, and that you will that you maybe like feel even tension in your body. It's actually quite common that when you're developing meditation, you're going to feel the opposite of what you're supposed to be feeling. And then you're like, I'm going to demand my money back. They told me I'd be peaceful, and now I'm just getting more and more anxious. Yeah. So, okay, fine, you can have your money back. But what this is doing is it's exposing layers of grasping and attachment to ourselves. Yeah. And it's showing us that anxiety that we have around our breathing and around our bodies. So don't worry about that. Don't pay too much attention to it. Just keep going. And like I said before, the main thing to focus on is letting the breath calm you down, letting the breath ease you. We good? Yeah, if you need to answer, please. So because the breath is an energy which is intimately connected with the rest of your body, you will see everything is reflected in that physical sensation of the breath. Okay? If you have an emotion, you'll see it there. If you have a thought, you'll see it there. If you're tense in your body, you will see it there. And it will be constant. Everything that's happening to you is reflected in your breath, and everything that happens in your breath is reflected in the rest of your body. In fact, according to Buddhism and according to Indian physiological theories generally, the breath is not merely that air that's coming in and out of your lungs, right? Breath is actually an energy that pervades your whole body and which you experience as the movement of energies through your body. So that movement of energies through your body is intimately connected with that flow of air. And they're dimensions of the same thing. They're not separate things. So as we are meditating, you'll find that your not just your breath becomes calm, but that your whole body becomes calm. Yeah? And it's kind of remarkable, actually. You'll feel like a sense of tranquility, like a depth of tranquility through your whole body just from watching your breath. It's kind of strange. So this physical dimension of the breath is the foundation of your practice. And if you can become clearly aware of that physical process of the breath, then your meditation will proceed well. Honestly, everything else will flow from that. You don't really have to worry about anything else. Everything else will flow from that. So be closely and carefully aware of what is the feeling of the breath. And you would be surprised at how many meditators have no idea what their breath is like. I mean, when I say you would be surprised, I was surprised. But I did a retreat recently, and I asked in the interviews, I asked all the meditators, what did your breath feel like? And I'm probably 80% of the meditators couldn't answer that question. Yeah, it sounds like an exaggeration, but it was. And even when I tried asking in a few different ways and tried to get a response from them, most people were sitting there and they couldn't tell me what does their breath feel like. Even though I was talking about this constantly during the teaching, they couldn't actually feel what does their breath feel like. They just talk about something else. No, what does your breath feel like? Is it soft? Is it smooth? Is it jagged? Does it have edges? What is the sensation of experiencing that mind? But that is what brings your mind into samadhi. When we talk about mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out, that's what we mean. Now, mindfulness itself is the continuity with which we maintain our awareness of the breath. Let me say that again. Mindfulness is the continuity with which we maintain our awareness of the breath. So that when we are sitting there and meditating, mind jumping around, thinking about this, thinking about that, worrying about this, going into the past, going into the future, regretting things, hoping for things, fearing things, desiring things, that's all loss of mindfulness. When there is mindfulness present, the breath is in the mind and it stays there. It has a continuity to it. So, one of the most common things people say when they talk about their meditation, the common things people ask about is all of these distracting thoughts, all of these things taking their mind away from meditation and all of these things. You're focusing on the wrong thing. When the Buddha was talking about meditation, how did he describe it? So sato asasati sato pasasati. Mindful one breathes in, mindful one breathes out. Don't get obsessed with all the things that aren't the meditation. Those things don't matter. Keep that awareness with that which matters, and that's your breath. Don't think, oh, what about that? What about this? And just keep on coming back to that. I promise you, it will work. I promise you, this is not an experiment. Okay? This isn't an innovation. This isn't a trial run. Okay? We're not seeing how this goes. This is a thousands of year old practice, practiced by millions of people all across the world for such a long time. It works. Just give it the time and the patience. When approaching meditation today, and we've got all the people here in this room, all the people online, look, number one thing that I see when I come, with a group of people like this, I see everybody has their own story. And some of you I know, and some of you I know something about your story. Many of you I don't know at all. I don't know anything about your story. But what I do know is that your story is far more complicated and rich and strange than I could possibly imagine. And all of the people here, all of the things that they've been through, all of the experiences that they've had, it's incredible. That means all of that wisdom that they carry within them. That means all of the wisdom which you are carrying within you right now. All of the wisdom that you are carrying within you. All of that compassion, all of that kindness, all of that goodness that you have developed in your life through your choices and your actions. Yeah? This is what is carrying you in the meditation. It's what brought you here, and it's what will bring you to liberation. So this is what in Buddhism we call the indriya, the potential, the spiritual potential that each person has. Those, if you've got the power of renunciation, the power of effort, to attend a session like this and to start meditation, that means you have strong faculties, you have strong potential. Right? So you can grow and you can transform. Yeah? But we have to be persistent. We have to have patience. We have to take things little bit by little bit. When I first started meditation, I remember the first meditation I did,
They told me this is how you see it. This is how we do. You pay attention like this, and so on. That's all great. Finish the meditation like nothing happened. What was that? It's rubbish. I thought I was going to like see consciousness and stuff, and instead it was just hurt. So I don't know what this is about. So well, might as well try again, give it another go, see how. So it does take some patience. It takes some sticking with it, right? And there'll be times when you're bored. Guess what? Being bored is good. I think it's one of the gravest disasters of modernity, to be honest, is removing boredom. But boredom is where creativity comes from. You know, if you look at any, where does art come from? People are bored. Might as well do something. Might as well paint something. Might as well write something. Your mind gets stuck in a ferment and things start to bubble up to the surface. You have to have a bit of resilience to it. But it's actually good to be bored. If you're bored in meditation, okay, don't worry about it. Yeah? A bit of pain isn't a bad thing. Okay, if you're sitting in meditation, and very often we're talking about bodies and we're talking about the physicality of meditation, you're going to have some pain. So sorry about that. Okay, that's not the point of it. We're not like deliberately doing it, but it's going to happen because bodies carry suffering within them. And especially as you keep your body still in meditation, then the pain that is inside your body will reveal itself through that stillness. The longer that you sit there, and it's kind of weird, you know, like I get like a sore muscle here in my shoulder when I meditate. I sit for a long time. It's weird, like why? Why is that particular muscle getting sore? I don't know. So it's going to happen, right? So we have to learn to manage that, right? Don't get too macho about it, all right? Your job isn't to like get out there and defeat pain and so on. That's just more ego, nor to be too much of a wimp about it, but just to have a bit of courage and to step forward and just say, okay, a bit of pain is all right. As a rule, if people want to know how much pain is too much or something like that, if the pain goes away when you come out of your meditation, then usually that's okay. But if you're sitting there meditating, especially if you're sitting cross-legged or something like that, if you think something's wrong, and then if your legs stiff for a few minutes after the meditation, never mind. If it's stiff for the rest of the day, then you probably want to see a doctor. So don't blame me if you do your legs in. All right, so don't push it too hard and don't try to listen to the stories or what people do or whatever and try to emulate it. Just try to do what you can do. So if we can establish a regular meditation practice, if we can find a physical space to meditate, if we can find a posture that we're going to be comfortable to meditate, if we can become comfortable in our own body, to become comfortable in our own body. And if we can be mindfully aware continually of our breath, right, in the meditation for a while, right? But obviously your mind at the beginning, your mindfulness is not going to be constant, but at least to have some continuity of awareness with your breath, then you will already see the benefits, right? We're not talking about enlightenment, we're not talking about deep states of meditation, not talking about anything like that, but even just that much, which is within everyone's capacity, you will already see profound benefits. You'll see your mind will become more peaceful. And that does two things. First of all, obviously you have the benefit of having a more peaceful mind and more peaceful body. That's great. But it does also something which is even more profound, which is that you understand that you can do it. You understand that your practice has led to this result, right? That's what's really crucial. So it's not about the meditation method. Practice whatever method you like, okay? I'm teaching a particular method here. Do that if you like. Do another method if you like. I don't care. It's the least interesting thing about meditation, all right? It's what you bring to the meditation that matters, not the meditation method.
So do whatever meditation you like, whatever teacher you want to follow, whatever school, whatever tradition, whether you're Buddhist or not, okay? I don't care. Very uninteresting, okay? Ishikana, Alex, just in time. You missed out all the boring bits.
Yeah.
Okay, so where were we? Meditation. Oh yes, yes, you see that actual manifest difference that it makes. It's undeniable. And once you've seen that, nobody can persuade you otherwise. Nobody can tell you that this isn't real. Nobody can tell you that this is just something that someone made up. No one can tell you that this is it's just a fluke. It's an experience that you have inside yourself, and that's where the Dhamma starts to arise. Now, whether you call that Dhamma Buddhism or whatever, honestly, doesn't really matter. I could not care less. As far as, you know, even though I'm a Buddhist, I study and practice early Buddhism, and I spend a lot of my time looking at, you know, details of Buddhist doctrines and all of these kinds of things. But honestly, I think that the most important thing of any spiritual path or spiritual belief is that it leads you on to the next step. That's all. If it's leading you to become a better person, that's what matters. And whatever path that you have, is that if that's supporting you to become a better person, then that's fantastic. That's all. That's all. I don't have anything else to say on that. So that's probably enough for today. I'll leave just a little bit of time for some questions if there are any. And so that's the first lesson this week on the introduction to mindfulness of breathing in early Buddhist meditation. I'm going to open up the chat here online, see if anyone has any questions there. But meanwhile, any questions here? Yeah, how's it going? Okay, good question. No, good question. Yeah, thank you. Good question. Why are we doing this? It's past 6 o'clock. The session goes past 8:30. We're supposed to be like 7 till 9. It's a session. But we'll be wrapping up in a minute. That's also we'll be doing that. Is that okay? I hope that's okay. Sure, yeah.
I'll be very quick. So thank you, Bhante, for your wonderful session today. For me, and this is not unique to me, it's looking at the kleshas, the afflictions of the mind, and how to overcome them. So I think like many people here, we go through ups and downs. I'm battling with my own ego and negative thoughts, whether it's from myself, from another person.
Okay, you said you'd be quick. One question, beginning with who, where, what, why, or how. How do you create a shield? Thank you. Okay, so when we're meditating, one of the things that happens is that your mind becomes open. You become more vulnerable and you become more connected. I think this is what you're talking about, right? So that is actually a good thing. It's good to be more connected, but you can also get affected by things more as well, yeah? So this is where a bit of balance is needed, yeah? If you find that you are, and this depends very much on personalities. Some people are very empathetic, and they tend to pick up on the energies of people around them a lot, yeah? So if you find that that's happening in meditation, sometimes it can happen too much because you walk into a room, you immediately pick up the mood of people in the room, yeah? So you have to learn to create a bit of that boundary and to remind yourself of who is you and who is that other. Yeah. So you can do that. The simplest way of doing that is simply to make that affirmation to yourself. Yeah. So just say, you know, this is me, this is my meditation, and these are my feelings. And just to remember that, so to create that boundary around what you're doing. So it is a very personal question, but you know, a good thing to bear in mind, if you're finding that you are regularly getting overwhelmed by those feelings, then put more effort into just creating like a, what you can do is you can create something definitive in your mind through the precision that you pay attention to the breath. Okay? So that means that you pay attention to the moment that the breath begins all the way through and the moment that it ends. Right? So because you're paying attention to the definitiveness of it, beginnings and endings, it tends to create like a stronger sense in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Anyway, okay, good. I know, Lucy, yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah, please.
Yes, if anyone wants to.
Okay.
We're going to. I love the Vietnamese place, just 2 minutes.
All right. So dinner afterwards. That's it. Okay. So for folks, anyone wants some dinner? Couple of these guys go for dinner afterwards. Yum. If you're online and you want to join into the dinner afterwards, can we do that yet, or they haven't invented that yet? You can send some emojis or something like that. Anyway, all right, great. Moment. You have a question? No, you ask it. No, you ask it. Yeah.
And your body becomes vulnerable. And so you're overcome with probably emotions that you've been hiding,
right,
blocked away. And so is that the goal of meditation? Or if that comes during a meditation, what are you supposed to just go back to breathing? Or do you sit with that emotion and with that?
No, you always come back to the breathing. All right. If you're feeling that an emotion is separate from the breathing, then that is telling you something. Yeah? It's telling that your mind is not fully integrated, because the emotion is one thing and the breathing is another. Yeah? So you keep coming back to your breathing. The breathing is the path. And you will see all of those emotions inside your breathing. Yeah? We'll talk a lot more about these things during the next few days, okay? Okay. Nina? No, just stretching. Okay, so got a couple of questions online. Okay, so from Diriyupa mentions about that we're having a retreat this year, and the retreat will be in
where is it? Place called?
It's in this. Oh, I'm trying to remember the name of the place, but anyway, it's past Broken Hill. Fowler's Gap, thank you. Yeah, Fowler's Gap. We have dates, right? You said starting on the 5th of May, okay? And we should have the booking and so on. Deepika is organising that. She's not here today, but we'll just make sure that we have that all booking details of that available. Last time I spoke to her about it, she was just trying to finalise a few final details. But basically that's booked. So this is in Broken Hill. Has anyone here never been to Broken Hill? Right? So this is your opportunity to go out in Whoop Whoop and to do some practice in the desert. So it's going to be great. Also, just, you know, just let people know, like, I mean, it's actually quite a bit closer to Adelaide than it is to Sydney, and it's probably the same distance from Melbourne as it is from Sydney. So if you've got any friends or whatever in those places, then let them know. So there's a train. So the idea is that you can catch a train out there and then we'll take you out to the place. Or if you prefer to drive or whatever, then you can do that drive, stay for a few days, you know, have a look around. But anyway, we're going to be spending a few days in the desert. And how many days? I think the retreat, I think like it's a week altogether. But then basically 2 days there and back. So it's about like 4 days actually on the retreat, right? Depending on how long you're traveling. And if it goes well, then we might extend it to 2 weeks next year, but we'll just see how we go. It'll be, should it be meta meditation? I think so, probably. I think we gave a specification. I can't remember exactly what we said, but yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a sutta we'll be studying, yeah. So anyway, just let people know so that's all happening, and I'll make sure that the website's updated on that. Okay, great. So from Marion, how's it going in France? Do you want to show your sunglasses? No, that's all right. No. We've got a lady here who has Macron sunglasses, so we just thought we might just make you feel at home. I'm not going to put them on, but anyway, Marion, here you go. Just a little bit. Does it feel like a little bit of home there? Happy to see you again. Could you please explain a bit what is the mind and what is the content of the mind? Bloody hell. When you say, people talk about awareness, mind, consciousness, awareness, and it's the same thing, phenomenon. Okay. So, as a general rule in Buddhism, we have what we call the awareness or the consciousness, and then there is that which we are aware of, okay? And those things always exist in an interdependent relationship. They exist as a network of connections, so that it is not the case in Buddhism that consciousness exists as an absolute and then all of the stuff of consciousness arises from that. All right, that's what they talk about in the Upanishads, but that's not the Buddha's idea. So the Buddha's idea is that these things always exist interdependently. So the mind can often be used as a general sense for all of these things, but usually we say maybe consciousness or awareness is actually the awareness of your feelings and thoughts and so on. So that's like a basic Buddhist model of the mind. So that's very briefly, but hopefully that's helpful. Christelle says, lovely snow in Sweden. Bhante, do early texts have any explicit mention of Anapanasati's mention of jhana? Look, Tim, that question is a bit too much for right now, but it will come up in subsequent talks. So if you don't mind, if I leave that to subsequent talks, and if you're still not satisfied, then please re-ask it. So as for booking on the retreat, we'll put that on the website as soon as we can. Like I said, Deepika was just sorting out a few of the details with the staff there because, I mean, they really are in the middle of the desert, so it's a little bit tricky to organise it. And they actually just changed, like the staff there just changed, so she was dealing with one person and then there's another person and so on. Has been advertised already, okay. So Leah B says, intuitive mind creates all kinds of ideas, creating individual, feel inside yourself. Look, Leah, that's honestly, it sounds like an interesting question, but that's too much for this time of night. We're having to wrap up quickly because we've got folks coming on. Again, can I ask you to just bear that in mind and bring it up again next time if we don't if we don't have time, yeah. Okay, so Dennis asked a practical question. How do I keep my practice going during stressful times with lots of change? I tend to stop practicing when I need it the most. Okay, I'm just going to suggest two very, very humble things here. Number one is to share your struggle with somebody. You don't have to share it with everybody, but just tell a friend, I'm going through something now. I'm finding it difficult to keep my practice going. And then maybe ask if your friend can help you to practice, okay? Sometimes you can just call someone, say, hey, have you done your meditation today, right? Or you can come and sit together occasionally, or you can do something. You know, you can even just like WhatsApp each other and say, oh, let's meditate at 6:30 this morning. Let's do a WhatsApp and we just meditate together. So you can do something to help to support each other in practice. So that's one thing. Another thing is, look, it's better to like reduce your practice but not lose it entirely. So, you know, just do a little bit of practice, even if it's just a few minutes, it's okay. And if you feel that you're struggling, it's all right. But don't worry, the Dhamma will still be there. Your suffering will pass and the Dhamma will still be there. So no matter what is going on, it will end. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Thanks, everybody. I think that's all for this evening. And just a reminder, we will be back here for the next 3 weeks, continuing this course on early Buddhist meditation, and we'll be running the course in parallel in Parramatta, which is on Tuesdays at the 5 Parramatta Square, 6 for 6:30 start. And are there any other events happening at the moment that we can promote? Okay, so Santi and Horace Monastery has a retreat in February, so check that out.
Venerable Prasan has a retreat that's being run by Nicola. Nicola has organised it.
Okay, so Venerable Prasan has another retreat being run. Venerable is on here this evening. Venerable, I don't know if you want to post any details of that retreat on there. Most welcome. But otherwise... Rhonda Place on Monday. There's a Dhamma talk by Venerable Santachitto. Is that right? At what time? 7 o'clock at Rhonda Place. Okay, great. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.